You're listening to a podcast from 702.
With Azania Mosaka
on 702.
Right, so Tuks athletes have a very proud, or I should say Tuks sport, in fact. They have a very proud tradition when it comes to competing at the Olympics. It was during the 2012 London Olympic Games. They had quite a number of athletes, the 2016 Rio Olympics, and now, of course, in the 2020-2021 Tokyo Olympics. And they won numerous medals previously, too, at the London Olympics. They had 2 gold, 3 silvers and 1 bronze over those 2 Olympics. And now the number of athletes that they've worked with who are part of their student athletes and alumni form quite a big component of Team South Africa at this year's Olympics. And so we join the director of Tuks Sport, which is the sports department at UP, Stephen Balls. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Hi, Zanya, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we were watching in the previous hour, you know, some of our athletes who were competing. You know, we didn't get to qualify. Wade van der Kerk, as well as Wayne Donnell, didn't get to get through to the finals. But there's still a number of other sporting codes where South Africa is represented, where we could still get a medal. So we're talking to you, I think, at an opportune time where we are 2 weeks into the Olympics and there's still more to come. Firstly, how many of your athletes and coaches are at the Olympics this year?
Yeah, thanks, Zanya. Yeah, we're very fortunate. Currently at the Tokyo Olympics, we've got 23 current members, which includes current students and alumni. And then there are about another 7 or 8 that are former student athletes in our program. Hmm. And then we've got a group of about 8 coaches, and we even have our head referee or our fencing coach. Coach Andre is actually one of the referees at the Olympics, and he was officiating in some of the EPE events as well.
Wow. So I was sharing earlier on the kind of principles, just looking broadly at the write-ups on Tuks Sport, that when you chase perfection, you catch excellence. But what is the philosophy? What is the driving philosophy?
Yeah, so I think the first and foremost is the culture that we want to create, we want to nurture, we want to manage, we want to groom, and that culture is crucial for us. So what we don't say is we don't have all the answers. We also don't say we've got all the resources, but we are sometimes going to ask the uncomfortable questions of ourselves. And the nice thing about it is that it's across the sporting codes, you know, so we're fortunate to have you know, about 35 sporting codes at the university, obviously, you know, operating at different levels.
Yeah.
But the cross-pollination that takes place amongst the head coaches, I think, is one of our successes. So for us, the ultimate thing is the environment. Are you creating a conducive environment for performance in your athletes and your coaches? We know coaches typically stay for a while, so they are crucial. Athletes do come and go, and they go through their performance cycles, and you know, some might have slightly shorter ones, others don't. So yeah, the environment for us is crucial in the space that we try and operate in.
Let's talk about some of the athletes, maybe your reflections. Have you talked to any of them? Because we had Akane Simbini over the weekend. Sadly, I think he must be feeling quite low, or had his moment, a low moment after he didn't get a medal, because he came fourth. And the thing is, he has, you know, achieved such great times in the previous competitions. Even when you look at his performance in the 2016 Olympics, he finished fifth in the final, and he's just kept improving. What is the word out there from our athletes, even Tatiana Skundmacher, who won our only gold so far?
Yeah, I think obviously every athlete goes to the Olympics. When they're at that level, they go to win a medal. They go to win. Mm. And I think too often we in our environment in our country is we're so critical when an athlete or a team doesn't, you know, bring back gold. What we forget is Akane achieved a fourth place at the Olympic Games. You know, the time he ran yesterday at 9.90 is I think it's in his top 3 or 4 times he's ever run, where you consider his PB as a 9.84. Mm. I mean, that's 0.06 off his PB. So You know, in terms of performance, you know, he actually achieved some amazing results. Mm-hmm. Was he hoping for a medal? Of course. You know, no athlete at that level doesn't strive for that. Is there areas he can improve? Most definitely. You know, obviously then you sit on the other side of the coin, you sit with Tatiana that, you know, as much as deep down she had hoped maybe she would bring back a medal, you know, she goes and does some amazing things and we all rejoicing, you know, with her. And I think our challenge is to find moments to rejoice with all the athletes.
Because even Kayleen Corbett has, exactly. You know, been forgotten in spite of her great her great swim in the same race with Tatiana. I mean,
exactly. I mean, Kayleen, for example, when she came into the Olympic Games this year, if she had made the semifinal, you probably would have given a high five to her and her coach. Mm. You know, so she's dropped 2.4 seconds in her 200 meter breaststroke, which at that level is massive.
Wow.
You know, to come in a fifth position with a personal best time, you know, you only athletes that compete against time, you only want them to try and get as close or improve their times. That's their goal. Because you can't control the person in the lane next to you, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or in the same heat as you. So, yes, Kayleen is one of those, for me, you know, has probably shown the biggest improvements at a Games like this, and we should be celebrating her successes. She's also 2 years younger than yes. Tatiana, you know. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what she can do. Exactly. You know, next year there's a World Championships. Fina is a World Champs in May, and then there's the Commonwealth Games later on in the year. You know, that is massive in the bigger scheme of her development towards Paris. So, yeah, I think we should be looking for the ones that where are the opportunities to celebrate the successes. Mm. If we take, for example, the hockey sides, I mean, you know, going into the games, people would have probably said that they were going to be beaten a lot more than they did. And they were not. They were competitive throughout. You know, they're competitive against nations that sit with 130 million rand budgets, wow. You know, over 4 year cycles. You know, our guys go to crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are realities. And again, what I'm not saying is we should be settling for second best, not at all. We should be settling for inferior performances, not at all. We're too proud a nation. You know, we always want to do the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also got to look at realities.
You're so right. You know, the other day, I can't remember which sport I was watching. It was re-watching Tatiana Schoenmaker's swim. And I thought, oh, yes. Little old South Africa, we always see ourselves amongst the top nations, and yet we have little resources. And we still managed to pull off, you know, some brilliance here and there in spite of all the challenges. So we love to box above our weight. We love to put a lot of pressure and great expectations on ourselves. And sometimes, you know, it pays off beautifully. But then at other times, you know, we get that reminder that we haven't invested in a way that we should. And I want to get your reflections on that a little bit later, but I want to come back to the point that you made about South Africa being a harsh nation when it comes to winning or losing, because this can place a lot of pressure on an athlete. How do you prepare the athletes to decompress after performing at such a high level post the Olympics or a similar event? And just returning back to normal, is it even an option after such an impressive feat?
Yeah, I guess the first question is, what is normal, right?
Yeah.
I think we've probably seen over the last 18 months what we all thought was normal has been thrown on its head. But, you know, I think the first and foremost thing is, what is the support structure? Who sits within that support environment for the athlete?
Yeah.
You know, and it starts very much with the coach. It starts very much with their home environment. It starts with friends and family. There was an interview of Tatiana over the weekend I listened to, and, you know, she was saying, yeah, she can't wait to get home to her friends and family now. You know, that is for her most important support structure. In other athletes, they might not have that as a support structure. They might have other aspects that they use as part of their support structure. You know, and if you believe in a performance system where it's a coach-driven, athlete-centered, and a science-supported environment, then those elements all pull together to support that athlete in the good and the bad times.
Mm.
And I think that is the challenge for us. There's good and bad. There will always be good and bad. You know, Tatiana in 2017 was probably wondering whether or not the swimming thing was actually for her.
Wow.
You know, she was reassessing, you know, remember she had come off a 2016 qualification that she missed by 0.01 of a second. I mean, that is just something phenomenal. You know, a person at her age at that time could have very easily said, you know what, this is not for me. But fortunately, there was a group of people, there was a group of family, there was a group of friends, there was a group of individuals that were able to try and help support her to be able to continue soaring. And luckily, she continued because we could have lost out on two medals, right?
Yeah, luckily she did. But having worked with athletes of all levels, you know, including elite athletes, do you know when you're training a star? And does this setting aside or identification of this particular athlete, like they could be a star, they are a star, does it affect how the athlete sees themselves? And is that a good thing?
Yeah, so I think, it's very sport specific. You know, generally, if it's sporting codes like, say, swimming and athletics, they are very distance and time-based, you know. So measurables along the way is actually quite easy to achieve. You can see, for example, when a person is a little bit more on track. You know, the Canadians, for example, and the New Zealanders, they use what they call these top times and the progressions thereof. You know, they try and predict where the athlete is now and where they should be. You can see it in sports science testing, for example, in certain sporting codes that require, for example, high energy outputs for extended periods of time. You know, you can get predictors really early on in their development to say, you know what, this person has got something unique about them. The challenge, though, is actually keeping them humble in the process. So if you ask me about Tatiana, you ask about an Akani, you ask about a GIF, for example, and you ask me an identifying characteristic amongst them, I would say it's their humble nature. Even with any successes along the way, you've never got the opinion that they have now become bigger than the sport. They have become bigger than the coach. They've become bigger than the system that supports them. And I think that is part of the challenge, is keeping, even though they are performing, finding ways that, you know, you realize that you just still have to do the work. Akani, Tatiana still has to do the work to be able to achieve it.
Yeah.
Because they've achieved prior success doesn't mean it's going to be long-term success. So I think it's that humility element of it, and talking reality. You know, the successes, I think, of your good athletes and coaches is where they've got an open, honest relationship. You know, I heard again an interview that Rocco, Tatiana and Kayleen's coach was in. And one of the things was he said when he was stressed last year during the lockdown, it was Tatiana who helped him keep calm.
Right.
It was Tatiana who helped him remain focused. So if that relationship is there where it's not just a give-give relationship, it's also a give and take, then it's a beneficial relationship.
Right, because the people who play that support role, I'm glad that you raise Rocco, for instance, but the people who play that support role for elite athletes, what do they need? Because to support, you yourself have to be resourced. Is Stephen still? Stephen still there? Something's gone wrong with that line. We're speaking to Stephen Balls, the director of Tuck Sport, and he's the acting CEO for the High Performance Center at the University of Pretoria. He was giving us the figures earlier on. 23 current student athletes from UP are at the Olympics. They have about 7 or 8 former students participating. 8 of their coaches are at the Olympics, and also their head, one of their fencing coaches, has been selected as a referee as a referee for fencing at this year's Olympics. So why or what have they done? What have they managed to achieve or do right in order to receive this sort of accolade or this sort of contingent representing us via the University of Pretoria at the Olympics in Japan? Stephen, we'd lost you there for a moment. I understand you're back.
Yes, sorry about that. My apologies.
No problem. This does happen. We're using a virtual link. It happens from time to time. Yeah, so I was asking about the support staff, you know, the support system at those that support the athletes, because they themselves, in fact, have to have a unique capacity, they owe a level of resource that they bring to that relationship.
Yeah, totally, Azania. And I think part of that is there's skill and there's experience that they bring with. I think the biggest element to a support team, and there's that common saying that says, are all the noses facing in the same direction? Are they pointing in the same direction? Because if the team and the team around it doesn't talk the same language, the same culture, the same measurables, it is so easy for it to start pulling apart the systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think part of the people that are driving the conversation, whether it be the head coach or a performance director, is also to identify who in the team is sitting in the boat and they're drilling holes in the boat and actually creating holes and blockages more than moving the ship in the same direction. You know, I believe that is a crucial, crucial element to a team. So, yes, people that come into a team have a unique skill set. They maybe have unique experiences. They may have unique qualifications, but are they facing in the same direction?
Yeah.
You know, Roger Barrow, the national rowing coach, when people, you know, wanted to be part of that team, the one thing he would always ask them, will this make the boat move faster? And if it doesn't, or we can't say that it will, but instead it might actually hinder the boat, then we mustn't use it. And I think that is our challenge in South Africa. We know we've got resources are constrained. And it's so easy for us to try and dump all these resources onto a program, but we actually waste the resource. Mm-hmm. And we waste the effect of the actual resource we got. You know, so if we've got R1, the question, I guess, for all of us in the performance space is, how am I really spending the R1?
Yes.
And am I appropriately spending the R1 to aid performance? If I'm not, then rather only spend 50 cents. Mm. Don't waste the other 50 cents. Mm. And I think that resource usage, whether it be the human resource, the financial resource, the intellectual resource, that is so crucial in aligning the systems.
Right. And you know, Stephen, this year, the mental health of athletes has come under sharp focus. When we look at the French Open with Naomi Osaka, even at the Olympics, and there's Simone Biles as well, they have really catapulted this conversation to a global stage. So how do coaches build mental health awareness into their training program?
Yeah, so I think it starts with the relationship. You know, I remember, you know, if we think back to 1996, in 96, Penny won the double gold. And people often forget that there was a young 14-year-old from America, Amanda Beard, that won the double silver in that Olympics. And many years later, after having a very illustrious career, Amanda wrote her autobiography, her book, And I get the name slightly wrong, but it was basically what people don't see when I cry in the water, you know, what they can't see behind the goggles. Mm. And so the conversation of mental health, the conversation of what athletes are really going through has been there, but hasn't necessarily been at the forefront. I think social media helps to get that conversation out there, most definitely. So I think it starts with the relationship first and foremost between coach and athlete. I used the example earlier, you know, Rocco saying, for example, it was Tatiana who allowed him to be calmer. She brought him back to say, okay, let's focus again. Now, it could have been very easy because, I mean, the traditional perception of a coach-athlete relationship is one typical, the pictures we always saw of a coach barking the orders and the athlete doing the work, right? But at that level, as they go through the ranks, it's no longer about that. It's about a relational understanding between each other. So if you're willing to listen on both ends, I think that starts the conversation around mental health. It's identifying the little triggers. You know, there's little things. If you know your athlete well, you learn to see what those little triggers are. You learn to see how they respond in moments of good and moments of bad. And so I think part of the thing is equipping ourselves each individually to be able to, whether I'm a performance director, whether I'm a coach, whether I'm an athlete. And we shouldn't also put in.
Oh, that line has failed us again. But we are have reached the end of our interview with Stephen Bowles. Something problematic on that line. Let's take a listen to these voice notes on the very conversation we've been having about athletes and supporting them.
Hi, Cecil from Pretoria. I think we need to get to a bit of reality here. Okay, so Wade van Niekerk did not make the finals. He's still the Olympic record holder, the world record holder. He's the best the world has ever seen. He's now 4 years older. And the problem with, I think, South Africans is that once you've captured gold, anything below that is suddenly not good enough. We need to catch a wake up. Thanks.
Hi, Tatiana. Tatiana Azania, brilliant show. Really love it. I was fortunate, or we were fortunate, to work with some of these top athletes now for the Olympics in preparation. They received financial support from the National Lotteries Commission, and the idea was that these athletes should focus primarily on, you know, getting ready for the games and not have to worry about cost for physio and all of that. And it is heartbreaking to see how some of them, you know, did not perform at the level that they set for themselves or that everybody was expecting. But in the end, as you said, you know what, we are not a forgiving nation. And I think just the fact that they are there is a huge achievement. So, we got to know them very personally. I mean, and you feel their energy, their excitement, their, you know, commitment to their actual, you know, profession. So I think we need to just give them a bit of slack and just celebrate them for representing our country. So, yeah.
Bravo.
Well done.
Yeah, absolutely well done to our athletes. Let's bring you the latest now in Eyewitness News.
Good afternoon. I'm Gladys Mutele. Deputy President David Mabuza will return to the country on Wednesday. His office has confirmed to Eyewitness News that he is doing well and is due back home then. The Deputy President left for Russia for a medical consultation in June. It was the second time he's taken leave from his duties to visit the East European country to receive medical attention. The DA says the country needs answers once the parliamentary inquiry into the recent unrest and security failures is concluded. The party held a media briefing outlining its expectations from the planned inquiry. The joint inquiry of both houses will start once a resolution is passed by both the National Assembly and NCOP. And legal counsel at the Life Esitimeni hearing says they intend to launch an application to have the arbitration report expunged from the proceedings. The court has spent the day hearing submissions from lawyers on whether the inquiry should proceed today after being postponed for a week to allow for parties involved to obtain legal representation. The inquiry has been tasked with determining whether anyone should be held criminally liable for the deaths of at least 144 mentally ill patients after they were moved to ill-equipped NGOs in 2016. Those are the headlines. This Eyewitness News and more at 3 o'clock or as it happens.
EWN Traffic.
Kempton Park, there's still a queue in traffic on the R21 north of the OR Tambo interchange. It is because of felt fires there, so do be careful. While in Amalgam, there's bumper-to-bumper traffic on Main Reef Road between a production road and the M2. And in Fosloras, we're also seeing delays along the N3 South between Leondale Road and Berry Marae Road. Lights are out of order in Sharon Lee at Malibongwe Drive and President Foshare, as well as in Lingsfield at Lingsfield Road and the N3. In the city of Tshwane, nothing major has been reported. If you do see anything else on the roads, Tsego will handle those in the next hour on 31702. I'm Amo Ramela, Eyewitness News Traffic.
If you're surprised at how expensive things cost these days, it's the perfect time to contact OUTsurance for a car insurance quote. They could surprise you with a monthly saving or give you cash. So give them a try. SMS out to 38350 for a quote. If they can't save you money, you can ask them for 500 Rand or 1,500 Rand if you've been claim free and with the same insurer for 3 years. You better believe it. OUTsurance is a licensed insurer and FSP. T's and C's apply.
Oh my gosh, who forgot the baby's formula? You did.
Bad. And so I think part of the thing is equipping ourselves each individually.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to, whether I'm a performance director, whether I'm a coach, whether I'm an athlete. And we shouldn't also put in.
Oh, that line has failed us again. But we are have reached the end of our interview with Stephen Bowles. Something problematic on that line. Let's take a listen to these voice notes on the very conversation we've been having about athletes and supporting them.
Hi, Cecil from Pretoria. I think we need to get a bit of reality here. Okay, so Wade van Niekerk did not make the finals. He's still the Olympic record holder, the world record holder. He's the best the world has ever seen. He's now 4 years older. And the problem with, I think, South Africans is that once you've captured gold, anything below that is suddenly not good enough. We need to catch a wake up. Thanks.
Hi, Tatiana. Tatiana Azania. Brilliant show. Really love it. I was fortunate, or we were fortunate, to work with some of these top athletes now for the Olympics in preparation. They received financial support from the National Lotteries Commission, and the idea was that these athletes should focus primarily on, you know, getting ready for the games and not have to worry about cost for physio and all of that. And it is heartbreaking to see how some of them, you know, did not perform at the level that they set for themselves or that everybody was expecting. But in the end, as you said, you know what, we are not a forgiving nation. And I think just the fact that they are there is a huge achievement. So, we got to know them very personally. I mean, and you feel their energy, their excitement, their, you know, commitment to the actual, you know,